Gemara on Gimel Amud Aleph, second line on the top of the page. Amar Rav Yudah Marav, Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chelko. Rav Yudah Marav says that an Eid Zomim has to pay according to his portion. The Gemara asks, "My Mishalim Lefi Chelko." What does it mean? He has to pay according to his portion. Eilema, if you'll tell me, I'm on the fourth line. Dahai Mishalim Palga, Vahai Mishalim Palga. That this one pays half and this one pays half, meaning that when it comes to Edim Zomim, if you have two Edim, we'll call them A and B. A and B say that Reuven owed $100, so they are found to be Zomimin. They owe $100. So if Rav Yehuda Marav means to say that each one pays according to his portion, which is $50, and we're trying to tell you that each one has to pay $50, if that's true, Tanina, we already learned that. There's a Mishnah later on. Mishalshin b'mamon ve'in mishalshin b'malkos. We divide the mamon, the money, we do not divide the malkos. So, if they testify that Reuven ate a piece of pig and he's chayev 39 malkos, each one of them would get potentially 39 malkos. We wouldn't divide it up, 19 and a half, 19 and a half. But when it comes to the money, if they tried to get Reuven to pay $100, so then each one of them is going to get, one of them is going to have to pay 50. So we already know that halacha. Why would Rav Yehuda Marav have to teach it to us? Says the Gemara, Ela could go into Itzum Chad Minayu. Rather, when Rav Yehuda Marav says, Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chelko, that he pays according to his portion, it means, in a case where only one of them became an Eid Zomim, i.e., A and B come into Beis Din. They say Reuven stole $100, he owes $100. Then C and D come in and say A was with us. B, we don't know, but A was with us on that day. He couldn't have seen Reuven steal the $100. So in such a case, Rav Yehuda Marav says, even though B doesn't have to pay anything because he's not an Eid Zomim, A still has to pay for his portion, says the Gemara. Ella kigon to itzum chad minayu. One of them became eidzomim to mishalim pagadidei, and the chiddush, the halacha of Rav Yehuda Marav is that he has to pay his 50. Says the Gemara, umi mishalim. Does he really have to pay for that $50 in such a case? V'hatanya. But we have a brisa that says very clearly, ein eidzomim mishalim mamon ad sheyazumu shnehem. An eidzomim does not have to pay ad sheyazumu shnehem, until both of them became Edom Zomim. In other words, the rule of Edom Zomim is double or nothing. You can't have one of them become an Edom Zomim. So we're still stuck. What did Rav Yehuda Marav mean? Amar Rava. Rava says, Ba'omer Edos Sheker Ha'adati. It must be a case where the Edom Zomim said, Edos Sheker Ha'adati. That I testified, I gave Edos Sheker. Edos Sheker Ha'adati. I testified, I lied. And therefore, he has to pay 50. Now, the question is, Rashi is silent over here. Rashi doesn't tell us what does it mean, Eid Zomim, Be'omer Eidu Sheker Ha'adati. The Bach, on the side of the page, the Bach says that it means that he comes in and he says he lied, and since he said he lied, he caused a loss of money. Dina de Garmi, he caused a loss of money, and he has to pay for the loss of money that he caused. Now, the Bach has a whole arichos, you could look there. The Tosfos points out that obviously, according to the Cheshbon of the Gemara, it has to be Beshuv Huzam. It has to be that ultimately they became Edom Zomim also. It's not enough that he just turned himself in and said Eidos Sheker Ha'adati. It has to be that he was Huzam. Because if he wasn't Huzam, then why would Rav Yehuda Marav say Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chelko? If it's just the guy who came into Beis Din and said Eidos Sheker Ha'adati, then he didn't do anything wrong. He did something wrong, but he wasn't an Eid Zomim. So why would Rav Yehuda Marav call him an Eid Zomim? The Ritva gives the following explanation. The Ritva says it's a case, it's an interesting case. Eidos Sheker Ha'adati, he comes into Beis Din and he says, I lied. Not just that he lied. He comes into Beis Din and says, I lied about Reuven stealing $100. I wasn't even there when I claimed that Reuven stole the money. I claim Reuven stole the money in New Jersey. I was in Florida. In other words, he turns himself into an Eid Zomim. Now, he can't turn himself into an Eid Zomim. First of all, he wouldn't be believed about witness number two. Second of all, we already know that you can't become Edom Zomimin unless both of them become Edom Zomimin. But says the Ritva, the potential chiddush over here would be that if you come into Beis Din and you say, I lied and I wasn't even there when I claimed that it happened, in such a case, we would make you pay sort of as an Eid Zomim. Okay? And that's why it's called an Eid Zomim, because he's what's called the Ritva says, Shesoser Ha'edos Belashon Hazama. He denies, basically, goes against his, retracts, so to speak, his testimony in a Hazama sort of fashion, by saying he wasn't there. And the Chiddush of Amar Yehuda Marav would be that, this is Rava's explanation, would be that in such a case we do make him pay for it. So the Gemara says that can't be anyway, because Kol Kamine, is he believed in such a case? Kevin Shehigid. We have a rule. Gemara in Ksuba says, Kevin Shehigid, once you tell, meaning once you testify in court about a certain matter, Shuveinu Chozer Magid. You can't come back and change your mind. So if he came in and said Reuven stole money, he doesn't have ne'amanus, he doesn't have believability to come back into court and say, oh no, I changed my mind, that's not what happened, this is what happened. No, sorry, we don't listen to you. So therefore it can't be that he said Eidu Sheker Ha'adati, and that's why he is Chayv. Ella, rather, Ba'omer Ha'adnu V'Huzamnu B'Bezdin Ploni. They say Ha'adnu V'Huzamnu B'Bezdin Ploni. They come in, or he says, okay, question if it's him or them. The truth is, it doesn't really matter. They come in, he comes in and he says, we became Zomamin in such a Beis Din. Rashi actually points out, his friend doesn't admit to this, but he has to come in and say it was both of us, because we learned earlier, if it wasn't both of us, then it's not accepted. It's double or nothing. But he says, in such and such a Beis Din, we were found to be Zomamin, okay, and then he escaped. And now he's coming into a new Beis Din and saying, now I want to pay for what I have to pay, my $50. In such a case, he would have to pay $50. And the Chiddush of Rav Yehuda Marav is, even though the other witness is not paying, because he's not admitting that he was found to be an Eid Zomim in a different court, since you admit that you were found to be an Eid Zomim, you would pay, according to your portion, you would pay that $50. Says the Gemara, Kiman, who is this going like? Delok Rabbi Akiva. This is not like Rabbi Akiva. We learned earlier on, the Gemara Daf Beis Amud Beis, that Rabbi Akiva holds that Edom Zomim is a Knas. The Ikra Rabbi Akiva, if we were following Rabbi Akiva, Ha'amar Afeinu Mashalim Al Piatzmo, Gemara said clearly that according to Rabbi Akiva, an Eid Zomim doesn't pay based on his own testimony. Because it's a Knas, we have a rule, Modeh B'Knas is Pater. He admitted to owing a Knas. Says the Gemara, we can even say that it's according to Rabbi Akiva. How so? Ella, rather, Ba'omer Ha'adnu V'Huzamnu B'Bezdin Ploni, where he says that I testified I became an Eid Zomim in such and such a Bezdin, V'Chu Yavnu Mamon. And then they said, now you owe the Bezdin $50, $100, you owe $50, right? As a group, you owe $100, each of you owes $50. Why is that different? Why are the words V'Chu Yavnu Mamon, the words that were added, why does that make a difference? The answer is, at the point of Beis Din where you're found to be Zomamin, you now owe a Knas for Kasher Zomam. But once the court processes that fee, it now becomes a court fee, which is essentially you owe the court money. That once it becomes a chi of Mamon, it's no different than if a person stole and Beis Din said you have to pay, and now the court is going to collect this money from you. It's now a court imposed fee, which the person's, the collector of the Beis Din's money, he doesn't know why you're. He says, go collect $100 from this guy, go collect $100 from this guy. It doesn't matter what you did wrong that you have to pay the Beis Din $100. At this point, it's strictly a chi of Mamon. It's no longer part of the Knas penalty for being an Eid Zomim. So if that's true, then the case of Rav Yehuda Marav was Eid Zomim Mashalim Lefi Chelko, and Eid Zomim has to pay according to his portion. When he comes into a second Beis Din, he didn't pay in the first Beis Din. They already made him chayev the money. Now he comes into a second Beis Din and he says, Ha'adnu v'huzamnu, we were testified, we were found to be zomen, and I'm coming to pay my portion. Salkadai techamina, and why does Rav Yehuda Marav have to teach this case? Isn't it obvious? The Gemara says, Salkadai tech, samachtal to Salkadai techamina, I would have thought, kevin de lechavre lo motzi v'chayev, since he can't obligate his friend to pay, because his friend doesn't admit, Ihunami lo mechayev, he also would not be mechayev to pay, he would not be obligated to pay. Kamash Malan, therefore therefore Rav Yehuda Marav comes to teach us that he would in fact be able to pay this penalty, not the knas, it's really the mamon, the chiyuv that was imposed on by Beis Din to pay his $50 for being an aid zomim. In other words, you might think that since both of them are not paying, maybe none of them have to pay, so therefore, the chiddush is that we accept his admission that he's really an aid zomim. So the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, the second Mishnah. The Mishnah is in the middle of the page. First Mishnah on the page. Me'idin anu es ish ploni shagirish es ishto. Two witnesses come into Beis Din and they say, we testify about Reuven, that Reuven gave his wife a get, he's divorced. V'lo nasan lo ksubas, and he has not yet paid her ksuba, so he owes her a significant amount of money. Now, Rashi points out that the husband, Reuven, is denying this claim. So, seemingly, instead of the husband claims that they're still married and he doesn't have to pay anything, and the witnesses claim that he has to pay the cost of the ksuba. So at this point, we would say, okay, well, if they're found to be zomimin, which Rashi points out, obviously, you know, in our context, that's what it is. They're found to be zomimin, they should have to pay the cost of the ksuba. Says the Mishnah, v'halo, however, bein hayom u'bein l'machar, whether it's today or tomorrow, sofo litin la ksubasa. Eventually, he's going to have to pay a ksuba. Either they'll get divorced, they'll have to give a ksuba in a year from now, in 10 years from now, in 20 years from now. Or, if he dies, his estate has to pay the ksuba, so essentially he's still paying the ksuba. So most probably, he's going to pay a ksuba. We'll see, obviously, if she dies, he doesn't have to pay the ksuba, but there's a very good chance that this marriage is going to end with him having to pay a ksuba. So therefore, it's not fair to make the Edom Zomim pay the full cost of the ksuba. He was going to have to pay it anyway. The only thing he wasn't is, the question is, when would he have to pay it, and how long would that process take, etc. Says the Mishnah, Omdim kama adam rotu litein b'ksubasa shalzu. We evaluate how much a person is willing to give for this ksuba, she'im nis almana o nis garsha, that if she gets divorced or she becomes a widow, backwards, if she becomes a widow or nis garsha or she gets divorced, ve'imesa, and if she dies, yirashanabala, her husband will inherit her. The Gemara will describe how we determine that payment, and Rashi and the Rush will clarify what exactly it means. Ketzad Shaman, the Gemara asks, how do we evaluate this payment? Amar Rav Chista beBaal. Rav Chista says we go based on the Baal, based on the husband. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia, Amar beIsha. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says we base it on the woman. Amar Rav Papa beIsha ubiksubasa. Rav Papa says we base it on the woman and her ksuba. Now, the question is, well, what exactly is going on here? So Rashi, there's a lengthy Rashi. Rashi explains as follows. There's a couple of sides going on here. His value is as follows. He has a field that's dedicated to paying off the ksuba in the event that it needs to be paid off. But in the meantime, he gets the fruits from those fields. He also, Rashi points out, he's going to get some nechse maluk, which we'll see in the Gemara, whether or not that's really part of the cheshbon, part of the calculation, the fact that she came into the marriage with a field. Nechse Mulug is something that she comes into the marriage with, let's say a field, an apple tree. While they're married, the husband has the rights to the apples. In the event of divorce, or the end of the marriage, the tree goes back to the woman. That's called Nechse Mulug. So in such a case, that the husband has that right. Also, in terms of rights, like we mentioned, there are three possible outcomes to this marriage ending. Eventually, this marriage will end, either by divorce, in which case he has to pay ksuba, or if he dies first, his estate has to pay the ksuba, or if she dies first, he gets to keep the ksuba. Rashi points out that his zuchus is worth more, apparently. Why? First of all, in the meantime, the field that's dedicated, that's set aside to be used for her ksuba, he gets that stuff. So he has a whole field where there are bushels and bushels of apples are growing every year. He gets to keep them and sell them or do whatever he wants with them. And as soon as they get divorced, she's going to get that field. So if they would not have gotten divorced for another 10 years, that's 10 years worth of produce that you're making him lose. Also, that's one advantage he has. So until the ksuba is settled, he gets to keep that stuff. Also, he's muhsak, means anytime you have a situation where one person has the money and one person claims that it's his money or her money or whatever the case is, it's the person who's in the driver's seat is always the one who has the money with them, because it's always easier to keep money than to have to give it away. It takes more and it takes time and more effort to extract money from somebody than it is to keep the money that you already have. So since he is muhsak, and as Rashi says, she is mechsara guvaina, she is lacking, mechsara is like chaser, she's lacking, guvaina is collecting the money. So he's in a better place. So ketzad shamin, okay, amar Rav Chista bibal. Rav Chista says we base it on the husband. Okay, whatever his value is, we figure out how much a person would pay to, so to speak, be in his situation, to take over his spot. Okay, in other words, in the event, the zuchus that he has, the chance, the likelihood of the marriage ending in him not having to pay the ksuba, i.e. if she dies first, also taking into account the fact that in the meantime he has all these peros, he has all these fruits, and also in the meantime he's the one who's muhsak. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia Amar Bi'isha. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says that it's based on the woman's perspective, which is what the risk-benefit ratio is for her, meaning the fact that potentially she could have a lot of money coming towards her. In other words, potentially this ksuba might get paid off. And if this ksuba is paid off, she gets a lot of money. But there's a possibility she'll die first, she'll never get the ksuba. And also, in the meantime, she's not getting anything. And in the meantime, she's not muhsak. So all of her disadvantages, even though eventually, hopefully, she'll get it, the value of that is not as great. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says we have to evaluate based on the woman. Amar Rav Papa Beisha Ubiksubasa. Rav Papa says, like Rav Nosson, that we evaluate based on the woman's perspective, but only her ksuba. In other words, at least according to the first explanation of Rashi, the Nichsei Malug we don't factor in. The witnesses come into Beis Din and say, Ruvain got divorced and he owes the ksuba. Now, if Ruvain comes in and says, but my wife, you were trying to make me lose not only the ksuba, but also my wife had 3 orchards somewhere and I was making a lot of money off those orchards, you're making me lose that also. So the Edim could say, we didn't know she had that. We were just trying to make you lose the value of the ksuba. So if Papa comes along and says, we evaluate based on the woman, but the ksuba itself, it's only the ksuba, because that's technically the only thing that came into Beis Din to cause him to lose. Now, it's true that something else was going to be lost, which is the Nechsei Maluk, but they could say, listen, we didn't know about it. Okay. Now, there's one other point that Rashi makes, which is, if you read the Mishnah simply stated, sounds like we're going with her. So the Mishnah seems to be questionable for Rav Chista. The Mishnah says, Omdim we evaluate kama odam rotzalitein biksubasa shalzu sheimnis almana, if she gets divorced oniskar, she gets becomes a widow oniskarsha, or she gets divorced veimmesa, and if she dies yirashanabala. It's always taking the woman's perspective. So how can Rav Chista say that the evaluation is based on the man? So Rashi says that it means that the way we evaluate is, she might, in other words, definitely, the ksuba was going to go to her. So we evaluate, well, if they would get divorced, she would get a ksuba, so we call it she getting divorced, she getting ksuba, her getting divorced, her getting the ksuba, we look at it from her perspective, but the value is actually the value that chance, that risk is worth to the man. Okay, so Rashi, you know, takes care of that language issue. The Rush doesn't like the Pshat of Rashi. You can look at the Rush, but just very briefly, the Rush connects this Mishnah to the next Mishnah. The Rush says that the way we evaluate it is not based on all the factors that Rashi mentioned, but it's much simpler based on the next. This will lead into the next Mishnah. The Rush says we have to be basically actuaries. In other words, how much would you be willing to pay now? Okay, you have to factor in the health of the man. So the man is 60 years old. The man is a non-smoker, and the man doesn't go skydiving. But he has a temper. So because he has a temper, maybe he's more likely to get divorced. Okay, You know, if the guy smokes heavily, you might say, well, probably he, you know, he might get sick and he might die earlier than a person in his otherwise healthy situation would have been. Basically, the way an actuary figures out how are we going to assess a life insurance policy on this guy or divorce insurance policy, so to speak, and the value of basically taking over his spot in terms of payments is if the ksuba, the value of the ksuba is 200 zuz, okay, whatever that value is, if it's 200 zuz, so how much would you be willing, let's say the statistics say that he should live for another 22 years, so how much then we say, okay, he should probably, this marriage on statistically should last another 22 years between the fact that he's an angry guy and the fact that he's a smoker or he's a this or is that, the marriage is going to last another 22 years. So then we'll say, well, how much would you be willing to pay? How much, what is the value of keeping that 200 zuz for an extra 22 years? Okay, instead of having to pay the 200 zuz now, if I told you don't have to pay it for another 200, for another 22 years, how much is that worth to you? Okay, and the same thing for the woman and the ksuba, including the karka, the land that was set aside for the ksuba, whether what type of land it was. We mentioned that that the man has a field that's set aside. The question is, what type of field is that? We know in halacha there are idis and benonis and ziburis. Those are three levels of fields. Idis is a very good field, very rich soil, fertile. It grows, makes very nice produce. A benonis is in between. Ziburis is a cheap land. It's not such a good land. It doesn't grow such good produce. So obviously, if you have to give $100 value, it's going to be a bigger piece of land of ziburis. But even so, it's still more beneficial to have the idis. So that also is going to be factored in when it comes to figuring out that amount. But again, it's all the future value. How much you'd be willing to pay to keep the money for an extra amount of time. That's the Rush's explanation of how we're going to look at the Mishnah and the opinions of the Gemara, whether according to Chista we evaluate based on the husband's perspective, or Nassan's opinion that we evaluate based on the woman's perspective, or if Papa's twist on Rav Nassan's opinion, that we evaluate based on the woman's perspective, but we only look at the ksuba, or the land of the ksuba, like the Rush says. The next Mishnah, the Mishnah on Daf, bottom of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Me'idin anu be'ish ploni shu chayev l'chaveru elav zuz. If they say we testify against so and so that he owes 1,000 zuz, okay. Al menas litl lo mikan var shloshim yom. Now, they say he committed to paying 1,000 zuz, and he's going to pay it within 30 days. Vehu omer. Now this is Reuven. So Reuven says vehu omer. Reuven says mikan var esher shanim. I borrowed 1,000 zuz, but I didn't agree to pay it for another 10 years. So he agrees to 1,000. So we're not making him pay 1,000 zuz, because he agrees that he owes 1,000 zuz. The only question is, did he borrow it today? Did he borrow it to pay it back in a month, or did he borrow it to pay it back in 10 years? Omedim kama adam rotu litein viyu biyado elav zuz. Beinos mikan vad lamed yom, beinos mikan vad eser shanim. So the Mishnah says, we evaluate. How much is a person willing to pay to be able to keep those 1,000 zuz for an extra 9 years and 11 months? And like we mentioned before with the Rush, it's the same idea. How much is it worth to keep this money in your pocket instead of having to give it away now? It's always more valuable to keep the money for longer, because you could always, you can invest the money or whatever it is, you could use the money in the meantime. So there's always an advantage. So what is that advantage worth, that you have the 1,000 zuz for an extra 9 years and 11 months? Says the Gemara, two lines from the bottom, Gimel Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says the following halacha, Hamalvas chaveru le'esar shanim. If you lend money to your friend for 10 years, shvius meshem taso. Shvius, shmita will cancel the loan. If you lend your money for 10 years, obviously sometime within those 10 years, you're going to run into a shmita. And we know that shmita cancels the loan, because the pasuk says shamot. Shamot means to cancel. Okay, just we're about to get to it, but besides the fact that the pasuk says that shamot it's going to cancel, there's also a prohibition of lo yigos. Lo yigos means that you are not allowed to collect the money that was canceled. It's according to most Rishonim, I understand. So there's two things going on here. Shamot is that it was canceled, the money is canceled. Lo yigos is the prohibition to collect that money. Now, V'afal gav, top of Gimel Amud Beis. V'afal gav, and even though dehashta, that now, lo karinan be lo yigos, right now, there's no prohibition against collecting. What is right now? It means as follows. You lend money for 10 years. 5 years into the loan, Shemitah comes along. At the end of the Shemitah year, the money is cancelled. And there's a prohibition of collecting it. So, the reality is, at this point, 5 years into the loan, there is no prohibition to collect because you can't collect, right? If you never lent somebody money, there's no prohibition of lo yigos. It's only if somebody owes you money, you're not allowed to collect it. But technically, he doesn't owe you any money. He's not going to owe you money for 5 years. So he doesn't owe you the money now. So right now, there's no prohibition of lo yigos in effect because he doesn't owe it to you. You have no right to collect it from him. So, says the Gemara, even though there's no prohibition right now to collect it, so for us, he lide lo yigos. Ultimately, he will come to lo yigos. In other words, at the end of the 10 years, when you're allowed to collect it, at that point, there will be a prohibition of lo yigos, of collecting that money, because at the end of the 5 years, which was the Shemitah year, the loan effectively was cancelled, even though technically the prohibition to collect it didn't happen until much later. Now Rashi points out that one might think, the top Rashi says, V'afagav dahashta b'shvias, at the time the Shemitah happens, lo karina be lo yigos, there's no prohibition of lo yigos, shaharei imbalinug, so if you would come to collect it below shvias, even if it wasn't shvias, it was the third year, the seventh year, the eighth year, whatever it was, of this 10-year loan. Below shvias nami ino yachol. You couldn't collect it anyway, because he could always tell you, you're not allowed to collect it until 10 years. So, lo amrinan, we don't say, kevan de lo karinan be lo yigos, lo karinan be shamot. We do not say, well, if there's no prohibition of collecting it, then it wasn't cancelled. Right? If you weren't allowed to collect it anyway, maybe it shouldn't be cancelled. The sof asi lo de lo yigos. No, we say that ultimately it will be lo yigos, and this is implied from the pasuk lo yigos bizman esreyu ki kara shmita kodem lachin. Okay. In other words, Rashi learns from the pasuk that the shmita, the cancellation of the debt, happens at the end of shmita, and lo yigos will come when it comes. But you shouldn't think that just because lo yigos didn't happen that shamot, the cancellation of the loan, didn't happen either. Rather, we say that it does. And therefore, if a person borrows money for 10 years, I'm going to borrow money for 10 years. So in the meantime, the loan is going to be cancelled. Masiv Rav Kahana, second line on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Rav Kahana asks the following question. We see from our Mishnah, not like that. Why? Because the Mishnah said, what happens if Reuven, two witnesses come in and say Reuven borrowed 1,000 zuz and he has to pay it back within a month. And Reuven says, I borrowed 1,000 zuz, but I don't have to pay it back for 10 years. The Mishnah said, line 3 on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, Omdim kam adam rotza litain, we evaluate how much a person is willing to give. V'yu elav zuz biyado bein litain mikan v'ad lamed yom, u'bein litain mikan v'ad eser shanim. How much a person is willing to give, whether he would have to pay this loan within 30 days, or he would have to pay it within 10 years. And that's the money that the Edom Zomim have to pay. That's the loss that they cost. Asks the Gemara, asks Rav Kahana, V'i amrit shvi'is misham taso. Now, if we say, like Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, that a 10-year loan, shvi'is is going to cancel the loan, kulunami ba'ushlumei. Why do you only have to pay the value that you'd be willing, that you would pay to keep 1,000 zuz for an extra 9 years and 11 months? What do you mean? You have to pay the whole 1,000 zuz. Why? Because the whole debt is going to be canceled. According to Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, there's no, the whole thing is off, the whole deal is done. Right, you borrowed for 10 years. Shvi'is canceled the loan. So according to Reuven, that he borrowed for 10 years, he doesn't even have to pay it back. He doesn't have to pay. He has to pay zero. So if he has to pay zero, and Reuven saying that and the Edom are saying that he has to pay 1,000 within a month, they're causing him to pay 1,000 to lose $1,000. So kulunami ba'ishlum, that they should have to pay the entire amount. Amar Rava. Rava says, Hey, Beis Aleph, Hacha B'mayaskin. And here, what is the case? B'malv al hamashkon over Moser Shtaros of Lebezdin. If you learn the halachos of Shemitah, halachos of Shemitah's Ksafim, the cancellation of money, okay, the last perek in Masech HaShvi'is, you'll know that there are two ways that you can get out of this prohibition. One of them is called Malva al hamashkon, which means that you ask for a collateral in return, which essentially means that he started the payment process already, perhaps, or okay, whatever it is, mava ala mashkon. So if I lend $1,000 and he gives me a gold watch as a collateral, then when Shemitah comes along, it doesn't cancel the loan. Also, moser shtros of the Beis Din, if you give over your shtar, your loan document to Beis Din, then you don't have the Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan. Ditzanan, as we learned in the Mishnah, hamava l'mashkan v'moser shtros of the Beis Din ain mashmitin. If you lend money based on if you lend money with a collateral, or you give your shtar to Beis Din to collect, it does not cancel the loan. Rashi says that this Moser Shtaros of the Beis Din, the Shtar, that's referring to the Prizbol. Prizbol that we know that we all sign at the end of the Shemitah year, that Prizbol, which Hillel was misaking, the Gemara and getting the details at length, that Prizbol, that's what Moser Shtaros of the Beis Din is. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos learns from the Mishnah in the end of Shviyas that there has to be two separate things. They're listed separately, there must be two separate things. And Tosfos points out that there's a fundamental difference between the two of them, but according to Rashi, Moser Shtaros of the Beis Din means prizbol. The Gemara is going to give an alternative version to this whole statement, and we'll read through it. Ika da'amri. Ika da'amri, there are those who say, means another version. Just to point out, Tosfos quotes from Rabbeinu Tam that we follow the opinion of this Lishna Basra. Lishna Basra is the later text, which means the one we're about to read, and the Rush Paskins that way follows that opinion as well. Ika de Amri, there are those who say, Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Hamalvas Chaveru L'Esor Shanim Ein Shviyas Mishamtaso. If a person lends money for 10 years, Shemitah does not cancel. That's the opposite of what we said before. Shemitah does not cancel the loan. So if I give you a 10-year loan, Rav Yehuda Amr Shmuel says it does not get cancelled. Now, V'yafa gav de Osi L'Dei Lo Yigos, eventually, there's going to be a prohibition against collecting. Right now, there's no prohibition against collecting, and since there's no prohibition against collecting right now, there's no problem of shmita, of cancellation of the loan, and therefore it never gets canceled. So even though at the end of 10 years, you're going to not be able to collect it, potentially, since at the time that the loan, so let's say in our example, you lend for 10 years, 5 years through that loan, through that the life of that loan, is a shmita year. So the end of that fifth year, which is the seventh year of the shmita cycle, normally, loans are canceled, but at that time you can't collect. So says the Lishna Basra, the second version of the Gemara, that since you can't collect it at that point, even though ultimately you would have had a problem of collecting it, since at that point you can't collect it, the loan doesn't get canceled. And since the loan doesn't get canceled, at the end of the 10 years, you can collect it like regular. Amar Rav Kahana. Now, instead of the Mishnah being a question on that statement, now it's going to be a proof. Amar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana said, "Afanana mitanina." We also learned a similar thing in the Mishnah. Omdim kama d'marto litim niviu elav zuz biyado ben litim mekamad lamayom ben litim mekamad esr shanim. We evaluate how much Reuven is willing to pay to keep those 1,000 zuz for an extra 9 years and 11 months. Ve'i amr shvius misham tasso. Now shvius would cancel it. Kulanami bo shlomile. So we see not like we see like the Mishnah that just like the case of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that it doesn't cancel, Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan. So to here, Shemitah is not going to cancel the loan, and that's why you only have to pay the amount that Reuven would be willing to pay to keep the 1,000 zuz for an extra 9 years and 11 months. Amar Rava rejects that proof. Maybe perhaps Shemitah normally would have canceled it, but in this case it's different because he was malve on a collateral, he loaned on a collateral, or he gave his documents to Beis Din. Okay. Next case. V'omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. I am 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 skinny lines up before the lines start to get a little wider. V'omar, first word in line, V'omar. V'omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Ha'omar l'chaveiro, Almanah shelo tishmateini shviyas. If a person says, I'm going to lend you money on condition that Shemitah does not cancel my loan, shviyas mishametis. No, shviyas still cancels the loan. The seventh year cancels the loan. Now, what does he mean to say? Lema kasava Shmuel masna mash kasava torahi. Who? Let's say that Shmuel is of the opinion that this is called making a condition against on against what it says in the Torah, and anybody who makes such a condition, the condition is nullified because it's going against the Torah. The Torah says Shemitah cancels, and you're trying to say that Shemitah won't cancel it. So you can't say that because that's not true. The Torah says it is. So we would nullify that stipulation, that condition, and the loan would go through, and Shemitah would cancel the loan. So the Gemara says, V'ha itmar, but we have a question, because we have another statement of Shmuel's which seems to indicate the opposite. Ha'omer l'chaveru, if a person says to his friend, Amanasha in l'cha alai ona, I'm selling you an object on condition that you can't hold me accountable for ona. Ona means to overcharge somebody by a sixth. So let's say a person has an item that's worth $100. He says, I'll sell it to you for, say, $150, okay, on condition, she'ein l'cha alai ona. Rav amar yesh lo alav ona. Rav says there is a problem of ona. Shmuel amar ein lo alav ona. Shmuel says no problem. You could do that. Okay, what do we see? We see that even though ona is prohibited by the Torah, Shmuel seems like you can make a condition, you can make a tanai that goes against what the Torah says. The Torah said you're not allowed to charge ona. Shmuel says, well, as long as you made a condition that you're okay with him charging you ona, you're allowed to do it. So we see that you're allowed to make a tanai, a condition against what is written in the Torah. The Gemara says, "Ha'itmar lo." We learned already about that statement, so now we have a contradiction of Shmuel. In the case of Ona, he said that you can make this condition, you can be masna amash kasav b'Torah. When it came to the case of Shvius, he said you can't be. So the Gemara answers the question, "Ha'itmar lo." We learned about this. Amar Avanan lo didim efshalim minei de Shmuel. It was explained to me in the name of Shmuel. Amanasha in lecha alai ona. I'm in the last skinny line. Amanasha in lecha alai ona. If a person says on condition that there's no ona against me, ain lo olav ona. There's no ona. Amanasha in bo ona. On condition that there is no ona in this, hare yesh bo ona. But there is. In other words, the language, you have to be very careful. If the words are, there's no ona against me, so you could say that. There's not going to be ona against me. But if you say there is no ona, that's simply not true. There is ona. So, hachanami here too. If you look back, amanasha lo tishmeteni shviyas, the case quoted earlier was Amar Yudamar Shmuel, ha'omer l'chavero. If a person says to his friend, amanasha lo tishmeteni shviyas, shmita shouldn't cancel. What do you mean? Okay? Amanasha lo tishmeteni b'shvius, that you should not cancel me during shvius. So then, ein shvius misham taso. Amanasha lo tishmeteni shvius. But in the case before, we said, amanasha lo tishmeteni shvius, that shvius should not cancel me. Shvius misham taso. Shvius does cancel the loan. You can't say shvius doesn't cancel the loan. It does cancel the loan. If you want to tell me, you want to say that on condition that you don't cancel my loan, that you can make that condition. But shmita does cancel the loan, essentially. We are now on the third medium line in the Gemara. Tana. We learned. Hamavas chaveru stam. If you lend money to your friend and you don't stipulate when he has to give it to you, in Rosh HaLatova pachas milamid yom. You're not allowed to collect it from him less than 30 days. Okay? The loan lasts for 30 days. You can't come to him 2 weeks later and say, I want my money back. Sava Rabba Barachana kamei de Rav lameima. Rabba Barachana said in the name of Rav, he thought that the following would be correct. Hani mili, when is this true? Bimalva bishtar. Only when it comes to a document. This statement was made without explaining. The statement was just, you lent money to your friend, you can't collect it for less than 30 days. Rabba Bar Chana assumed that maybe it meant only if you wrote this down in a document. In other words, the transaction was valuable enough to write it down in a document. The law of it is the tarach, the kus of shtar, butzer mitlosen yomen. If I'm going to write up a whole document, it means I need witnesses, it's a whole to-do, a whole process. It's not worth it if the guy's going to be paying me back tomorrow. It's only if it's going to be a long-term loan, I want to make sure that I have proof that I have this loan. But if he's going to pay me back in the next few days, I trust the guy, I'm not worried. So if I'm going to be matriach myself, bother myself to write the shtar, to write the document, it must be that it's going to be a 30-day loan. Av malva al peh lo. But if it's an oral agreement, then you can collect it whenever. Says the Gemara, Amalei Rav, Hachi Amar Chabibi. This was Chabibi. Chabibi was the uncle of Rav, Rabbi Chia. Echad Amalva Bishar, Echad Amalva Apeh. Whether it's a loan that's based on a document or an oral agreement, you have to wait at least 30 days. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a similar braisa. If you lend your friend money without stipulating, you can't collect less than 30 days. Whether you lend by a shtar, by document, or whether you lend by a oral agreement. Amar Leh Shmuel Rav Masna. Shmuel said to Rav Masna, Lo Tezeh V'Karech Adam Efeshes Lach L'Hashmaitza. Don't sit down until on your seat, on your chair, until you explain the following sugya. Minah Ha'Milsod Amar Rabbanan. From where do the rabbis know? Hamav Es Chaber Ostam In Rosh HaLotov HaPachas Malamit Yom. Echad Hamav Mishtar V'Echad Hamav Alpeh. How do we know this halacha? That a person who lends money without specifying that he can't collect the money for less than within 30 days, whether he lent it, whether he borrowed it, whether he lent it with a document or he lent it orally. Amalei dechsev, as the pasuk says, karv shnas hasheva shnas hashmita. That's the pasuk. Okay. Mimashma shenemar karv shnas hasheva. The words mean karv shnas hasheva. The seventh year is coming, shnas hashmita, which is the year of shmita. Mimashma shenemar, is it not implied from the fact that the pasuk says karv shnas hasheva, that the seventh year is coming? Eini yodea shehi shnas hashmita. Don't I already know that it is the year of Shemitah? Well, why is it repeating itself? Elama Talmud Lomer. What is it coming to say? Shnas hashmita. What is the word shnas hashmita? Lomer lecha yeshmita acheres shehi kazu. There's a, not only is there a shnas hasheva, there's also a shnas hashmita. There's also another type of cancellation, so to speak, of a loan, meaning you can't collect the money. Ve'ezuzu amavus chaberistam. And what is this case? That's a case where a person lends money and doesn't specify. Such a person can't collect for less than within 30 days. Why? Where do they get this from? So Shemitah means he can't collect it. So there's a certain time they can't collect. But where do we get the 30 days from? The Amar Mar, Shloshim Yom B'Shana, Chashav Shana. 30 days in a year is considered a year. So it's a type of year. Shnas HaShemitah. There is a shana, referring to the Shloshim Yom B'Shana, is already considered, on a certain level, a full year. So 30 days, there's a time where we say you can't collect for 30 days. What is that time? When you didn't tell him when you want the money back. So the halacha is, if you lend somebody money, you can't collect the money for 30 days. The next case in the Gemara, which is five lines before the bottom of the page, the next two cases, really, are total sidetracks to the Gemara. Rashi explains that the reason for these are statements of Rav Yehuda, where Rav Kahana asked a question. Our Gemara started at the bottom of Gimel Amud Aleph, the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the case of borrowing money for, you lend money for 10 years, the Shemitah cancels the loan, and Rav Kahana asked a question on it. So once we did that, we're giving other cases where Rav Yehuda made a statement and Rav Kahana asked a question, even though they're not connected to our Gemara per se. V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, five lines from the bottom. Ha'poseach beis hatzavar b'Shabbos. If somebody opens up, their clothing used to be a big cloth, and you would have to cut a hole to put your neck through. So ha'poseach beis hatzavar b'Shabbos chayiv chatos. If a person opens up that hole on Shabbos so he can make it into a shirt, he's chayiv chatos. For a tikkun kli, Rashi says. So the Gemara says, Mask of Lord of Kahana. Rav Kahana asks a question of Chima Ben Zalem Maguf Aschavis. The halacha is, if you have the Gemara in Shabbos later on, Shabbos Kuf Mem Vav, says that if you have a barrel and you attached a cork of some sort to stop up the hole of the barrel of letting the wine out, and you even toiches al pi achavas betit. You even put in plaster or something to make it stay, glue to make it stay. If you cut that open, the halacha is you're not chayv achatos. So the Gemara asks, what's the difference? Rav Kahana asks, why is it that if you cut open this clothing, make a hole in it, now it's usable? So you have to, you're chayv achatos. Why is that different than the case of the barrel, where you cut open a hole, now it's usable, now you can get the liquid out, you can get the wine out of the barrel? Says the Gemara, Amalei, Rav Yehuda Amarav said back to Rav Kahana, Zechibur v'zeino chibur. One of them was attached, one of them wasn't attached. In other words, when it comes to the big cloth, it's all one piece of cloth. So you're detaching from the original piece of cloth, you're making it into a kli. The barrel, it originally had a hole in it. You close up the hole, you're just taking out that hole. You're reopening the hole, but the key is you're reopening the hole. It wasn't originally sealed that way. It wasn't really made that way. It was really made, they cut a hole in it already, and then you filled up the hole. So to cut off that cork, or whatever it is not not something that's, it's not a new hole, it's an old hole. You're reopening an old hole, so you're not chayav a chatas. Okay, so we're up to the Gemara, four lines from the bottom. This sugya goes well into the next amud, so we're going to stop here. And when we learn Daf Dalet, Be'ezras Hashem, we'll have to pick up from the Gemara at the bottom over here.